We're exploring the year in technology and what breakthroughs have changed how we live and work. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Kent, thanks for being here. So we're not living on Mars yet. We're not traveling in autonomous cars, getting around with jetpacks. But the growing number of devices in our lives that became smarter, that means connected to the internet, did certainly seem to make life more interesting. And no, I do not care to talk to my kitchen faucet. I can turn it on myself. Thank you very much. What new devices actually made your life in the pandemic a little easier? Is there something you bought into that you now regret? What was overblown? What tech is up and coming and about to be a true game changer? It's 800-642-1234. Cameron Cheryl is a writer and designer for Esquire.com, where he covers technology and video games. Cam, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Good morning. We also have Danny Dumas, who is an editor-at-large for Esquire magazine. Danny, welcome to you.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, Danny, let's start with you. It seems like we are more reliant than ever on technology. Did technology save us from the depths of a pandemic? What will the history books say about our tech?
Well, I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for myself. I think that technology this year did help me a lot with dealing with the pandemic. I spent a lot of time exercising this year, and I use a lot of technology that I normally would have used I wouldn't have used. So technology that would have replaced my gym, technology that would have replaced my masseuse, technology that did so much to make me feel better this year. I actually started training for a triathlon this year. And one of the things that I did, normally I would have been on an exercise bike in my gym, but this year I actually got a triathlon bike. I got a carbon fiber model from Felt called the FRD Ultimate Dura Ace DI2. It's a mouthful there.
Wow.
But it's, yeah.
That's highfalutin.
It's highfalutin, but it's one of the lightest bikes you can actually buy. It's just a shade over 15 pounds.
Uh-huh.
And what's insane about that bike is that it's made out of the same carbon fiber that they use in Formula One race cars,
uh-huh,
and high performance aircraft.
No,
so
kidding. Wow.
Yeah, so when you swing your leg over it and clip your equivalent to the pedals, you kind of feel like you are part of that bike. It
wow.
feels like it, man and machine have sort of become one. And there's really only, you know, when you are training for something like that, there's only so much you can do to improve your performance. And one of the things you can do is cut weight on the bike. So
sure,
a bike that
yeah.
only weighs 15 pounds, you're going to be able to do things just much, much better. Be able to jump up hills faster. You'll be able to ride faster. Your times will be lower.
Yeah, certainly. Thanks to technology. I think I got the polar opposite commuter bike this year, which is the heaviest of heavy bikes that can get through Wisconsin winters and the snow and the ice. So
well, you need that in Wisconsin.
We're on opposite yeah. spectrums, Danny.
I live in California, so it's very easy here. You know, if it drizzles a little bit, I'm like,
yeah.
oh, I'm not gonna go out riding today. That's crazy. Yeah.
Oh well, Cam, what about you? Like, you know, what did the pandemic change the way you think about technology or anything that you have in your life?
You know, it did. It like Danny, I've also had to replace my gym. I've had to replace a lot of exercise equipment with it. And beyond that, just the work from home nature from everything. I think that while we always knew you could work virtually and while we always had the resources like webcams and mics and screen sharing and all of that, a lot of us hadn't used it before the pandemic kind of forced us to. And I think with as much of a bad rap as tech has been getting and how it's always doom and gloom with what we hear, it is kind of amazing the way that things have been able to carry on even amidst a pandemic and not being able to be in the office, not being able to have meetings. It, for a lot of career paths, it really didn't slow them down. It allowed a lot of flexibility with that. And I think the pandemic's been a really good chance for people to see just how technology can help us be more flexible in that nature.
Cam, you're crystal clear. What kind of mic are you wearing?
I am wearing the Blue Yeti. It is actually just over $100, $130. It is a wonderful, easy mic that you plug in and there's nothing else you have to do. Now, I'm a little spoiled. My brother is a sound engineer, so he took the $130 mic and made it, spruced it up a bit.
Oh,
but
yeah. Okay.
Even with that, it is it is a very, very easy and worthwhile investment, especially if you're going to be calling into a radio station or in a lot of meetings.
Oh, dear. Well, let me reintroduce both of you. We're talking with Cam Sherrill and Danny Dumas. They write about technology for Esquire magazine. We're recapping the year in tech, notable advancements, gadgets that changed your life in a pandemic. And you can join in with the tech that changed you, 800-642-1234. Cam, you also recommend Facebook Portal Plus. What do you see there?
Plus is that you can set it up and it's there. It's not having to move your laptop around and get everything, get a mic reset up, get if you're using a ring light because you're calling in for anything that has to be a little more glamorous. If you're trying to get background set up or if there's one specific part of your home that has a good backdrop, you can take this and move it anywhere you need to call into work meetings through Zoom or whatever. But beyond that, it's a phenomenal piece of tech for staying connected with family. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit, in my opinion, easier to use than some of the other portal and home video calling systems for maybe older family members or even kids who want to stay in touch with other family members. I'm based out in D.C. and my family's actually based out in Wisconsin.
So it's been
a really, really nice way to stay in touch with them. I have a 9-year-old little brother who loves to use it to call. It's just a really nice, easy way to set it up somewhere. It is easy to move also if you need to, but in my experience, it's at its best when you just find that good backdrop in your house.
Well, backdrops are the new bling, right? It's all right? About our background.
Oh my God, absolutely. That's your new fashion, your new status symbol.
Danny, what about you? What tech has made your work easier this year?
My work, well, you know, a lot of stuff has made my work a lot easier. I can tell you, one thing that really made my entire life easier was the Hypervolt cordless vibration massager, and that's a device from Hyperice. It looks like almost like a pneumatic drill. It's this big, black object, and you use it as a massager. And I'm somebody who, you know, I used to like to get sports massages after, you know, I'm turning 30, or I'm turning 40 next year. Oh God, and I would go off a run or a swim, or even after I'd get off the bike, I'd be so, so sore. And normally I'd go get a sports massage, couldn't get one. So I would grab this cordless massager, and I'd be able to massage out like these really bad knots, these really sore muscles that I'd have in my quads or in my deltoids or my pecs. And afterwards I would feel like $1 million, maybe $500,000.
Certainly maybe saving some coin as well. Talking with Danny Dumas, who is an editor at large for Esquire. Cam Sherrill, designer and writer at Esquire.com. Are you in the market for some new high-tech gear? What are you looking at? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're looking at how tech responded and tried to improve our lives. It's the year in tech here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Microsoft Teams and Slack kept businesses running, coworkers connected with each other day and night, and then Zoom on the scene, making it easier to host virtual events, not just meetings, but the kids' birthday parties and chats with grandparents. Zoom posted its third quarter revenue, raking in $777 million, up 367% year over year. What tech is your lifeline in the pandemic? What devices did you try but you could do without? What New Year's resolution will involve the tech in your life? 800-642-1234. Danny Dumas is an editor for Esquire magazine. Cam Sherrill, designer and writer at Esquire, and they're with us for the hour. So, Danny, let's talk about something that you haven't, that I'm very curious about. There's a fancy toaster in your life that you're fond of?
Oh, there is.
Oh, my gosh.
The Balmuda. Oh, my God. I'm ready to spread the gospel of the Balmuda. So Balmuda is a Japanese toaster brand that is very popular in Japan, all over Asia, actually, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan. And it toasts bread in it looks like a small little microwave. And the way it toasts bread is really sort of interesting and ingenious. What it does first is there's a little slot on top. You take this tiny, tiny, looks like a little miniature coffee cup. And you pour water on top of this little slot. You put it whatever you're toasting into into the Balmuda. And then you close it up, toast it. And what happens is it takes the little bit of water that you put in there and it heats it up, and then it injects whatever you're toasting, say an English muffin, with steam, right? So it steams it up really, really well.
Huh.
And then after it's steamed up, then it toasts it, right? So you end up with this object, this thing you're going to eat that is you bite into it and it's crispy and crunchy on the outside, but then the interior is sort of moist and fluffy and steamy and delicious. And it what it does is it transforms the way you sort of approach toast and the way you look at toast. And I'm serious. I'm absolutely serious here.
I get it. So it's like it's adding that moisture and then it's toasting.
That's exactly right. So so things don't get dried out in it. Right.
Yeah.
So this becomes really, really apparent when you're toasting things that tend to get really dried out and almost like desiccated when you toast them. Right. So if you put in like whole wheat bread has a tendency to kind of taste a little bit like has the consistency of a hockey puck after you pull it out of a toaster. Right. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, you know, the edges too can get kind of sharp.
And it's sharp. And what the Balmuda does is that by injecting it with that steam, even things that are like slightly stale come out of there and they are crunchy on the outside, but like moist and delicious on the inside. I cannot recommend that Balmuda enough. It is. Here's something crazy. I just moved into a new house. I did not bring I don't have a microwave because I use the Balmuda to reheat everything because
wow.
It just tastes so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see you're sold. We're talking with Danny Dumas and Cam Sherrill. They write about technology for Esquire magazine. We're revisiting the year in tech and breakthroughs on the scene, making our lives more comfortable or in the pandemic. Maybe it is a toaster. 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Marcus now in Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus. What about you in tech? Hi.
So I don't even know if this qualifies as tech, but what I found myself turning to through COVID and all of this is more like handwritten notes and cards and letters to my family members and my friends, just as a way to reach out and just, you know, let them know. I feel it's a more tangible way to reach out because then they can actually hold something that I had held, and it's like it keeps us all connected. And I realize it doesn't quite qualify, and my friends are going to make fun of me mercilessly, but it is what it is.
Oh, I love it, though. Cam, handwritten notes. I'm smitten.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we have to be doing, is anything to keep us connected. And actually, to kind of bring it back to tech, one of the things we had talked about the other day, we were just talking about, was how I've been using my record player more. I never used it, except for on the off occasion that I had company or was feeling a little fancy that night. And then when the pandemic hit, it's been a really good way to undigitize something, to bring something analog back in. And beyond just giving me breaks every 10, 15 minutes when I have to flip the record, which is great and probably annoying to my managers. But I think that because we've had to push tech and a digital lifestyle in so many new parts of our lives because of the pandemic, that that's exactly right. Anything analog, handwritten, anything like that's been a lot more sacred and a lot more impactful between everything. So I think that's a brilliant thing.
What sacred vinyl are you listening to?
Currently, I have the Temptations on, which is great.
Yeah.
I do have some newer vinyls. I've been listening to a lot of Vampire Weekend. Okay. And some other stuff, a lot of summery stuff, even though it's winter, I think just to keep the energy up.
Energy. Yeah. I hear that. That's good. So Cam, I want to talk to you about TVs because my husband comes up to me on Saturday morning and says, look at this. I want to show you something on my phone. And I go, it's a TV. Two questions for you. Will it fit? And is it on sale? And I'm probably not asking the right questions, but Cam, what happened with TVs this year?
TVs have been on a very, very interesting journey over the last couple of years. And then this year it kind of culminated. Over the last couple of years, we've seen a really, really great thing happen with TVs. They're getting bigger and cheaper somehow. There is also TVs that are not getting cheaper, but those tend to have some amazing piece of tech in them. So if you want to get a 65-inch 4K TV right now, you can for under $500 to varying qualities and varying frame rates and all that stuff. But now that we're stuck at home and we've been consuming so much more media, I feel like everybody needed to go out and get a TV. So there's some really great options out there for any price point. TCL is one that sticks out as being a really, really good one for a lower price point that's not going to break the bank and tends to deliver some really good quality. Of course, you've got Sony and Samsung. We also wrote about a LG TV that probably isn't the right price point for a lot of people. But if it is a right price point for you, it's an amazing party trick. It is about $60,000, but it folds out like blinds. Yeah, it rolls out and into like a TV stand like a blind. Necessary for a lot of people? Probably not. I mean, if you've got a wonderful beach house where your TV is right in front of the view, then chances are this is a great TV for you. But beyond that, I mean, if you're looking to get a new 55, 65, 75-inch TV because you've all of a sudden need a much larger screen, you can do that now for under 600, under 500, even under 300 in some cases. And the sales on TVs are ridiculous. I know everybody waits for Black Friday to try to pick up their TVs. It is not necessary anymore. A lot of these tech deals, especially on TVs, you'll find the same Black Friday deals, if not better deals, through the entire year, especially right as football season is starting, right as any sports season is starting for that matter.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice to see something that was known as such a luxury become so much more consumer friendly.
Danny, you know, we're on our computers, our laptops at home, it seems like all the time. Are there any advancements in that area?
There are. We have a lot of accessories to kind of help us get through the day, with help with eye strain, to help with audio. I actually, this is going to sound slightly crazy, but I actually route the audio from my my laptop out through my Sonos speakers. So this is a little bit crazy.
Okay, please explain. Yeah.
So I listen to music throughout the day, and that's one of the ways I can write really effectively if I put on a little classical music, a little hip hop. Depends on like what I'm writing, what I want the vibe to be. But sometimes I can't deal with the speakers that are built into my laptop. I also can't deal with, you know, just having like a set of headphones on just sort of like as almost feels like a clamp, like a vice grip on my head all day. So I'll route it through a good set of speakers. So in my house, I have all Sonos products in different rooms. And I'll oftentimes route my audio through the Arc soundbar, which is it looks like a large, it's like a 4 foot long, just black speaker. And the sound that comes out of that is just absolutely bananas. You get amazing separation, great mids, even, the basses is pretty excellent coming out of that. And it's just a nice way to sort of like change up your day. You know, if you've had like your headphones on all day, or your coming out your laptop speakers all day, it sounds really good. The only thing that I do caution is that it can get a little bit loud. So if you are living in a small apartment, your neighbors may complain, which I don't have a problem. I think if your neighbors are complaining, you've done a good job.
Danny Dumas, editor at large for Esquire, Cam Sherrill, designer and writer for Esquire.com. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. What lessons did new tech teach us in the pandemic? How do we learn from our experience and pave the way to a successful and more productive year in 2021? We're taking stock of the year in technology, or maybe the year in toasters, if you will, on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The business analysts, they tell us the work-from-home culture will persist through next year and beyond. How did you set up your remote office? What tech are you leaning on to find your next job? How did AI change your work and livelihood this year? Join in 800-642-1234. Cam Sherrill is a designer and writer for Esquire.com, and Danny Dumas is editor at large for Esquire. They're with us for the hour. Danny, let's turn to smartphones and our love-hate relationship with our phones. You know, they make it harder to avoid work, and yet we're lost without them. Do you have any tips for how to manage smartphone use?
Yes, to put your phone down at the end of the day. I suffer from using my phone too much. That's something that we've all, I think, anybody who's a person with a smartphone, which is pretty much all of us now, has an issue with this. And the problem is that phones have been designed to become addictive, right? So, social media, our emails, our Slack, like it's all these things that work together to divert our attention. And we're people that need, human beings cannot function, with all of our attention being diverted all over the place. You know, we are people who can basically do one thing at a time and that's it. So
yeah, we're not good multitaskers.
We're not good multitaskers. We didn't evolve that way. We can do one thing at a time really, really well. And if our attention is being diverted, then we sort of, we're not quite as effective, right? So what I do, I have a couple of little hacks that I do. So that I'm not picking up my phone and checking it all the time. One of the things I do when I really need to concentrate is I will turn my phone on to black and white mode. So I'll turn all the colors off, right? And that does something to my brain and to, that the phone isn't quite as appealing anymore, right? So you're not on social media, scrolling through aimlessly, looking at, different different pictures and hitting like, everything's like this monochromatic black and white slate. Another thing I'll sometimes do is I'll just turn my phone off of the internet, right? And I'll put it on airplane mode. And that way, it's not pinging me constantly. I'm not getting hit with like Slack messages. I'm not getting hit with instant messages, and I can actually concentrate. Last thing that I definitely recommend everybody do, and sometimes I don't do this to myself, and I always kick myself in the butt in the morning, is I don't sleep with my phone next to me in bed. I don't have it next to me, so
it's
I'm not like
your alarm waking. Clock.
It's not well. No, it is my alarm clock, but it's not there.
Oh,
right?
Okay.
So it works in two ways, right? So it's not on my bedside table. Usually I have it across the room.
Okay.
So you know, you wake up in the middle of the night, you can't sleep. What do? You roll over and you pick up your phone and start looking at it, right? I do that when it's on my bedside table. I'm sure many, many people do this. But it's actually bad for you because the light from the phone is hitting your eyes and it's actually telling your brain to wake up. It's saying like, oh, it's light outside. Even if it's like 2 or 3 in the morning, you know, your brain's like, oh, I need to wake up now, right? And so your brain actually releases chemicals that are responsible for becoming wakeful and alert. And that's why a lot of us, you know, after we've been scrolling on our phone, you know, all of a sudden, if we have a little bout of insomnia, it makes it actually worse. So having the phone across the room, you're still in bed, maybe you can't sleep. You're not going to get up in, you know, in the middle of the night, go over, get your phone, and then sit there and scroll Instagram. You're going to leave
you
alone.
That's way too much effort, right?
It's way too much effort, right? And the other thing is that if the phone's on the other side of the room, when your alarm actually does go off in the morning,
I know this is coming.
You're going to have to get up, get out of bed. Even
I do that
if it's
too.
Cold.
Yeah.
Right. It's a good little life hack. So the thing is that I think that everybody should remember here is that the smartphones work for us, not the other way around. But we have to do things in our life like putting the phone across the room, putting it in a black and white mode, turning off the internet every now and then, putting on airplane mode and ignoring the phone. And that allows us to use the phone and the phone doesn't actually use us.
Kim, what about you and smartphones? What are you thinking?
You know, I think I agree with everything that Danny said there. I think like a lot of other people, when we started working from home, really, really messed up my work schedule and was on all the time because I had my phone with me. I could get pinged at any time. And because one of the benefits of working from home is a more flexible schedule, as long as things are not on a time constraint, sometimes people ping you late at night or early in the morning. And because I had my phone on me at all times, you're getting pinged at all times. I think a lot of other people were suffering from this problem of always being at work, especially because you were so stressed, you didn't really know what to do. So I think that I kind of learned through it to turn my smartphone off. I haven't tried the black and white mode, but that sounds pretty brilliant. I think that they're kind of one of those double-edged swords where it's great because you can always be contacted. You can be contacted by loved ones. I think they're really important right now to keep up communication. I have more communication going with people who have always been good friends of mine, but maybe we haven't kept in as good touch. More phone calls. Phone calls are really important right now. I've spent more time on the phone in the last couple of months than I think I did in total in 2019. Just talking for hours with friends. And I think that's a really...
It's lovely.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really nice way because although you might have Zoom fatigue or video call fatigue, you'll definitely have texting fatigue and instant messaging fatigue. Something about calling a friend or a loved one or a family member, especially with not being able to travel for the holidays, and just kind of talking like you would if you were seeing each other, is really, really great. And getting rid of that stigma that, you know, it's almost the opposite now. You text when something's urgent and you call when you're just goofing around and you want to catch up.
We're talking with Cam Sherrill, designer and writer for Esquire.com. Danny Dumas, editor at large for Esquire. We're reflecting on the year in tech, what things have helped us live through a pandemic. What about you? What tech surprised you this year? Was there any technology that you had to learn how to use this year? 800-642-1234. Danny, what are the best new smartphones you recommend? What do you see out there?
You know, in terms of smartphones, it's no smartphone. No, I'm just kidding. I think most of us at Esquire use the new iPhone. And there's different species of iPhone out right now. I'm currently on the Pro, which is the larger, more powerful iPhone that has the advanced camera on it. But it's a little bit on the larger side. Some of some people need a smaller phone. I'm actually considering downgrading to the iPhone SE, which has a little bit smaller screen, a little bit slower processor, but also is a little bit more portable. And going back to, again, to what I touched on earlier and what Cam just said, like it's less of a dominant item in your
dominant
life.
Dominant fixture in your life, yeah.
Yeah. Another smartphone that we liked a lot this year that came out was the, I don't know if everybody remembers the Motorola Razr. So Motorola made the, this is before the iPhone. Motorola.
You're reaching way back.
Let's take the time machine. Let's take the DeLorean back to 2004. Let's go back to 2004. We don't have smartphones yet, but Motorola comes out with this incredibly thin flip phone called the Razr. It's you flip it open, you talk into it. It's got a beautiful color screen. Motorola sells millions upon millions and millions of these devices. And then a couple years later in 2007, the iPhone comes out, completely just, blows the Razr out of the water. Motorola reissued the Razr this year. They issued 5G version of the Razr. It's faster. It's also got a flip mode on it. So it's not this monolithic brick that sits in your hand. It's actually a phone that flips up, flips down. And I don't know about you, but did you ever own a flip phone?
I did. Yeah, it's like a blast from the past.
the pleasure that you get from hanging up on somebody by closing that phone down. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I can hear it in your voice. Just being like, this conversation is over, and then clicking that phone shut.
So satisfying.
That feels really good.
Yeah.
And you can get that. You can get that now with the new Motorola Razr 5G. You can get that, that clapping shut feature again. And if you're a little bit burned out on the iPhone, maybe you're a little burned out on like your Android phone. The Razr 5G might be a device that you might want to consider.
We are discussing the year in tech, emerging trends to watch, what to watch on our smartphones. Dandy Dumas, editor at large for Esquire. Cam Sherrill, designer and writer at Esquire.com. What advances made a real difference in solving important problems this year? How did you see tech at the heart of it? What new gadgets were overhyped? What breakthroughs will change how you live and work? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation on the tech in our life. We have Dandy Dumas and Cam Sherrill. They're journalists with Esquire, and they're with us for 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Lloyd now in Eau Claire. Hi, Lloyd.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. What tech are you thinking about?
It's the blockchain. It's a fairly new technology that has given us Bitcoin and an array of cryptocurrencies, and they are having and will have quite an impact on world economies. There's a lot of people that regard Bitcoin as an alternative to gold, and quite a hot topic now.
Yeah, Cam, you first, cryptocurrency, your hot take.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard a little bit about blockchain with it being a more accessible wallet system, While when Bitcoin and cryptocurrency were kind of at their height, and they're still at their height, but when it was really hyped a couple of years ago, all that talk about people losing hard drives and losing all this, trying to figure out just how to store that cryptocurrency was its own challenge beyond figuring out how to buy it. And it's become a lot more accessible now where there are even apps that you can use to buy into cryptocurrencies that'll store it for you. I think it is very like any piece of tech and anything in this world, it's really, really early on it, even with it being around for years now, for almost a decade. But like anything else, it's worth a shot. It's worth trying. And now that it's accessible, anything when it gets to that point of being accessible at your fingertips is definitely great and a good time to try to get into it. And Bitcoin had just recently reached its new high. So obviously, even after people were claiming the bubble had burst and it was going to be a downward spiral from there on out, it's still absolutely a worthwhile thing to look at and to try out if you've got the means.
And Danny, you know, Facebook also got into cryptocurrency.
Oh God, they did. Yes. Facebook got into cryptocurrency, and we're seeing every day we see more and more cryptocurrencies pop up. Besides like the big dogs like Bitcoin, Ethereum, XRP, Litecoin, we're seeing a cryptocurrency like Decentraland, Algorand, Bitcoin Cash, Uniswap. All these things are popping up. And what's interesting is that some people are actually making some people are making a living, but there are people who are playing the Bitcoin markets almost like the stock market, where they're investing cash into different cryptocurrencies and trying to make money on what can sometimes be incredibly explosive growth. What's interesting is I read a thing on Twitter just a couple days ago. It said, like, if you had invested $1,000 10 years ago into all these different stocks, it was like Tesla, Amazon, Apple, you'd have X amount of money. If you, 10 years ago, if you had invested $1,000 into Bitcoin, you would today, do you want to take a guess how much money you'd have?
It's so volatile too. So
it is volatile. Although if you do look at the price of Bitcoin, it has remained fairly stable over the last few years.
Uh-huh.
But going back to my point earlier, if you had invested $1,000 into Bitcoin 10 years ago, right now you'd have $237 million.
Oh my gosh. Oh, wow.
Yeah. But that's explosive growth is sort of unprecedented in the crypto markets.
Right.
If you can, one Bitcoin now is currently trading at $19,296. You can buy fractional shares in things like Bitcoin, but there are other coins right now, Filecoin, XRP, Ethereum, which are a lot more reasonable to purchase. And, who knows, they might have that explosive growth that Bitcoin also had. There's a lot of different factors that go into crypto valuation.
It just seems like it's so far away from actually paying for the groceries.
I don't think so. I actually use cryptocurrency to purchase things. Normally it's items that are sometimes I'll use it to buy things from other people. Like if I buy, I live in the Bay Area, so it's a little bit easier to do that sort of thing here. I have a friend who bought a car using cryptocurrency. He bought a used Tesla, and the person he bought it from, she said, "Hey, do you want to just trade some Bitcoin for it?" And he had a couple Bitcoins that he had bought a couple years ago. And he goes, "Okay." And he literally paid 1.235 Bitcoins and bought a used Tesla Model 3.
Wow.
And so I think actually we're on the precipice of these cryptocurrencies becoming more and more widespread and becoming more and more they're becoming more and more easy to use.
Well, thank you both for joining us. This has been fun.
Yeah, I've had a lot of fun today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
That was Danny Dumas, editor-at-large at Esquire, Cam Sherrill, writer and designer for Esquire.com, where they cover technology, video games, and other things. Edward Anderson was a dairy farmer, a father, and a veteran of World War II. He died in November from COVID. He was 97. And this week, as we approach the end of 2020, WPR is profiling some of the people we lost in the pandemic. Rob Mentzer has this remembrance.
Edward Anderson spent 4 months as a prisoner of war. It was 1944 and the prison camps were full, so the Nazis forced him and about 2,000 other American captives to march for hundreds of miles. When they ate anything, they ate grass soup. Ed kept a secret diary of his time as a prisoner. His daughter, Sandra Cherney, still has it. On the back of it, he wrote a list of foods he imagined eating when he got home.
Tapioca pudding. And he had pie, apple pie, cheese.
Ed grew up on a dairy farm in Barron County. He was 20 years old when he was drafted to fight in World War II. He was captured in Belgium in the Battle of the Bulge. A newsreel from 1944 documented the battle for Americans at home.
The Nazi Party is willing to sacrifice every building and every soul in Germany to stave off defeat. War is conducted in mist. And turmoil and uncertainty.
We were running out of food, ammunition, what have you. I ended up with a bunch of wounded down in the basement of a house, and that's where the Germans found me.
There aren't any recordings of Edward Anderson, but in 1991, his friend Wayne Erickson gave an oral history interview to the Wisconsin Veterans Museum. The two men grew up 10 miles away from each other, but they met as prisoners of war. Erickson died in 2003. Of the thousands captured, Erickson said fewer than 500 survived.
Well, some just collapsed, some were shot, some froze to death, some... We have no way of knowing what happened to some. Some we do, but some we don't.
Ed weighed less than 100 pounds when American troops liberated them. He came home and got married, he took over the dairy farm from his dad, and he drove a milk truck. Ed and his wife had two kids, Sandra and her brother Lee, who died in a motorcycle accident in 1973. Sandra says when she was a child, her father was always very busy. He didn't talk much and never talked about the war.
He was a man of very few words when it came to talking about himself.
She was an adult when she learned about his experiences. And in 2016, the Barron County Veterans Service Office and a congressman presented Ed with a POW medal. He enjoyed the ceremony, Sandra says, but he was still reserved. He didn't speak except to say thank you. Sandra is 74 now. She lives in Texas, but she video chatted with her dad regularly. In early November, she and the staffers at his nursing home were making plans to celebrate his birthday.
By 5 that afternoon, they called me. It was about 4:45, and they said, your dad's running a fever. We're going to do the fast test, which they did, and he was positive.
Ed had COVID-19.
He did live through the night. I FaceTimed with him in the afternoon of the next day, and he lived one more day. He lived 48 hours after he contracted the virus.
Sandra says she knew her dad could go at any time, but it was still a shock. He was doing well for his age. Sandra was looking forward to visiting him in 2021. It feels unfair that the pandemic took him. She thought she'd have a few more years with him. Ed died 2 weeks before his 98th birthday. Rob Mentzer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.